Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, Tom Zappia.
Hey.
How do you do, bud?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Here's what I want to talk to you about. Right. You just got... We're in Mecca. You visited the Comedy Store in Los Angeles where everything is happening.
This is true.
You just dip your toes in there. You're mostly a North Jersey comic.
Sure.
Operating out of the Stress Factory as your main kind of hub.
Yeah.
You're a host here sometimes.
Yeah.
You're a beautiful man.
Oh, thank you.
How did you feel about the Comedy Store?
The Comedy Store... I went in with extremely high expectations because it's, you know, like you said, the Mecca, I guess.
The Madison
Square Garden of comedy. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't... It was incredible. I went to a couple shows. It was amazing. I saw Superstars. I saw Kill Tony. I saw I saw the open mic, so I kind of got a little taste of everything. But I just didn't, and it's probably because I had never done comedy or been near comedy in LA. But it just didn't. I didn't have that sentimental feeling when I walked in. Like I felt the history. I just didn't feel a connection to it. Probably because, but I mean, I never.
You did felt stand like a visitor.
Yeah, I was definitely a visitor. The layout was a little bit differently than I expected, not that that means anything, but it was still incredible, like, as I was looking at the pictures on the walls and watching the shows and stuff, but, like, it's not like the feeling I get when I go on the Comedy Cellar. I don't know why, maybe I just know the comics more, and I spend time in New York a lot, but it was still incredible. It was, you know, it was
you
probably for anybody.
Home.
Yeah, I felt like...
Those are the two clitorises of the... It's like one's the prostate and one's the OG clitori. You know, it's like, but those are the two fucking nerve endings
exactly.
of the comedy scene in America. So you feel at home at the Comedy Cellar. That's where it's aspiring to. You feel like I've made it when I'm a paid regular at the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah, I would like...
But you're just visiting the Comedy Store.
Yeah, I'm visiting the Comedy Store. But I mean, I'm sure if I... I mean, I started in New York, so I'm sure if I started in LA, I would have that feeling towards the Comedy Store. I mean,
right.
Why wouldn't I? But yeah, I was definitely visiting. Yeah.
How'd you feel about the topography? How'd you feel about the vibe there? Any surprises of being in LA? Was that your first time in LA?
It wasn't my first time, but I was there when I was younger, so I barely even remember it. I wasn't even thinking about comedy. I was with my parents, so we were doing touristy shit. I was kind of just on my own this time, exploring. But yeah, I was amazing. Like right on the top of Sunset Boulevard, like where the hill starts, and
mm-hmm.
I walked in, and you know, I was just like, that club is so like huge now, and like you got security and you got everything.
Yeah.
So like I kind of was like, I wasn't able to like see it at like its like when it was shitty or whatever. But I mean, no surprises. I didn't mingle with any comedians really as much as I would have wanted to, or like. Even do stand-up there. I was too late to sign up for Kill Tony and the Potluck, so I was kind of pissed about that. But I mean, there was a dude who was on who's like a regular there who like works the door, and he's also a comic. He was on the hosting the open mic too. I saw him later in the night. So I mean, it seemed like a very vibe. I forget, big fat dude. I forget his name. Mm-hmm. Looks young. I don't really know how old he could have been though. Probably 20s. I don't remember his name. He was working the back door, like, you know, when you go in to the original room where the bar is.
Uh-huh.
He was checking IDs there, and
mm-hmm.
then he came in like 2 hours later. I saw him hosting the open mic. I forget.
Yeah, what I like about that place is like the inmates definitely run the asylum. It's like they make sure to motivate all the door guys with stage time.
Exactly.
You know, and so it is like an artist commune.
Exactly.
But yeah, during the dark days, you know, with Tommy Morris, you know. I'm actually writing a book, and one of the chapters is about the regime change between Tommy Morris and Adam Egget, because I definitely saw it, because I lived in L.A. from 2009, 2014, and then, so that's when the regime change happened, and I met Tommy Morris several times, and I would be in the OR, and there's like a show going on, right? Tommy would take a phone call in the booth. And be screaming on the phone so loud that everyone in the OR would go, wait, what?
Really?
He would just get mad. He would just get fired up at a phone call. They'd be like, you fucking blah, blah, blah! And it was like, ruin the show.
Yeah, what the fuck?
It was just like, you know, so like someone... Here's the thing about Tommy Morris. If I could just like delve into his personal life a little bit.
Sure, because I don't know anything about him.
He wanted to be a rock star.
Like an actual musician?
Yeah, like he wanted to be AC/DC, or he wanted to be like the Rolling Stones or something like this.
Right.
And so he started like managing like shitty little rock clubs in Connecticut or something as his way of getting in with the club, and then maybe they'll let my club perform the band. And so, in my opinion, and I've had limited interaction, but I've heard about him and I was around him and all that stuff. I think that every moment he wasn't a rock star was torture, and that became a cancer on the entire club of this Comedy Store during his, because it's like his whims, because he didn't care about life because he wasn't a rock star, so his whims were what, and he wasn't always right about anything because he didn't think things through.
Right.
He only wanted to be a rock star, and so I just feel like, then when Adam Egit came in, he's like, oh yeah, you're a national headliner, you don't have to do the open mic, right? And so just someone who made sense took over, and it changed everything overnight.
That's crazy.
Everything overnight.
How did Tommy get there in the first place?
I don't know. I can only assume that he just kind of followed Mitzi for a while and just was like, hey, I don't know. Like, he would just, like, kind of cuck, you know? Yeah, I think that's what he did. He just gave her oh, you're beautiful. You know, oh, you're right. So smart. And then she's like, do you want to run the club? Like, I think that's what happened.
Damn.
So, anyway, a little history lesson for you, but, yeah. Yeah, so you started in New York City?
I started stand-up in...
Is your family from New York City?
No. I'm from Jersey, born and raised, unfortunately.
Did you go to college in New York City?
Nope. I went to school at this school called Seton Hall University.
Uh-huh. It's
a private school that I regret every day.
What'd you get your degree in?
Communications and bullshit, journalism or something like communications and journalism.
And then you moved yourself to New York City to be a journalist?
I've never lived in New York City. I just was like, how I started is weird. I was like, I was in school and I was like, you know, I didn't really know what I was going to try to do after school. I got like a easy degree. I was just into writing shit, like kind of creating my own shit. And then, I don't know, I kind of just got... I was already always into comedy a little bit, but I kind of really got into it, like, at the end of college. So, like, I was, like, bored one day, and everyone was fucking doing all these internships. Like, college, you gotta get internships, you wanna get a job. Well, I was like, oh, God. And how much of a joke this was, I couldn't get a fucking internship for the life of me. But I was watching all this comedy shit, and me and my college buddies, like, we had, like, a core of us, we would get wasted every weekend and, like, watch comedy and shit. Mm-hmm. And we decided to go see Pete Davidson. He was kind of, like, blown up off SNL. Not that I'm, like, a huge fan of him. I think he's funny. I think now he's a fucking idiot. But, I mean, like, we actually came... Yeah, we were like, all right, fuck, let's go see him at Stress Factory. We came here to the Stress Factory and saw him. And, like, the months leading up to that, like, 6 months before that, I was like, I want to do stand-up. I realized I could just go to open mic and sign up, I guess. Honestly, don't have a great memory. I don't remember exactly what my thinking was. But I think I was just like, I want to try this. And then I realized I could. And then I went and saw Pete. And then I was like, all right, fuck it. This summer, I'm going to start. It was, like, springtime. Right. I was like, all right, this summer, I'm going to start. And I bitched out for the whole summer. And then my senior year of college rolled around. So I'm, like, 21. And I was like, all these kids are doing these fucking internships. I was like, I got to do something while I'm up at school. And I had class, like, twice a week. And I was just like, I want to work at a comedy club and maybe start. And I started fucking just, like, emailing, like, I emailed, like, Caroline's, like, The Cellar, like, all these places. Because I just New York. You would think I would hit up Stress Factory because I just went to a show there and I was like, didn't even know they had an open mic.
And you're way closer proximity-wise.
Yeah, so. I was in, like, the Newark, like, Oranges area, so I could just jump on the train and go in. And I was just like, New York seems to be where it's all happening.
Right,
I was like,
right.
I got to start. I was like, in my head, that's the only place I could start. I didn't know I could start in New Jersey.
Mm.
And, like, a couple clubs, like, got back to me like, yeah, you could fucking, you know, watch the door or run beer or whatever. And then Stand Up New York, which is this little shitty club on the Upper West Side. It was kind of fun when I was there. I heard it's going to down the shitter or, like, whatever. I don't know. I haven't been there in a while. Anyway, they got back to me and they're like, hey, yeah, you want to work here and do, like... They literally called me an intern. I would, like... Bullshit. I was trying to, like, get promotions going with, like, nearby bars and shit. I was bullshitting. Mostly what I was doing was fucking around and trying to watch the shows at night, do the open mic for free. I would run beer in here and there, and I would, like, send out emails to our customer list, like, once a week, and I pretended like I was working, but I was really just showing up to hang out.
Right.
And I was like, well, now I can do the... They had a mic every single night, so I was like, well... was my first day. I think my first day, I was like, this is it. And I did it. That was the first time ever. But it's weird because I was in Jersey, from Jersey.
So you were an intern before you did stand-up.
Yeah, I was technically like an intern or a worker there. I think it was my first day there. I did the open mic. I was like, fuck it. Maybe like my second or third day. Mm. And then from there on out, I would just like kind of go in and like they'd say I was an intern. I would do shit to help the club. I wasn't like, you know, I'd run the liquor truck when the orders came in and shit. But I would just go in from the days I didn't have class. I would just go in on the train like 3-4 nights a week. Mm. And just like kind of like do shit for them, and then at night do the open mic, and then watch the shows for free, like sit in the back and just watch all the comics come in. And then I really like delved into it, and then that's when I started doing New York. I would go do mics at night, and that's how I started.
So other than the stand up New York, what was the kind of other dives that you found yourself going to in New York?
The Creek. When I first started, that was probably one of my first places I did after stand-up in New York.
And then did you realize, like, you know, I had an argument with my mom today because she saw me. I went to Bernie's Tavern in Chester, New Jersey for their open mic on a Wednesday that the Stress Factory wasn't happening. And, you know, I live closer to there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it was like a zero level mic. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like, I think this, as far as open mics go, it's an A-level open mic at the Stress Factory.
Sure.
You only get 3 minutes, but you have an audience. And
most
so
of the
there's
time
something,
you have an audience, yeah.
As long, especially if you're in the top 10, you have an audience. Yeah. So if you're funny, you could get laughs. If you, you know, a zero-level open mic, it means that there's one or four people waiting to perform, right? And so my mom was trying to give me all these notes. Like, I made the mistake of inviting, okay, you want to see me do stand-up? I'll be, like, around the corner from the house. Here, right? It's a zero-level open mic, right? I had, like, a piss-poor set. Mm-hmm. And then she wants to give me all this advice about it, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like, I started when I was 16 doing comedy. And it's like, you have to understand that stand-up is half the audience. It's like half you, but then also half the audience. Like, if there's an audience waiting and watching and you don't perform for them, that's on you. But if there's nobody and you do your best,
right.
That's the best you could have done.
Sure, sure.
And so, like, it's like, how did you start to realize, like, what, that this is a moving target? What were some of your first revelations when you're going to New York every day and figuring out, you know, what the fuck you're trying to do?
I don't really know. I was just like,
did you find your voice? Did you think, oh, I'm funny like this?
Nah, I still don't have a fucking voice. I don't even know what that means. Like, I'll go up and sometimes I'll be over the top. I'll be like pissed about something. I'll be exaggerated. I'll be like Bill Burr status, not in terms of good quality, in terms of, you know,
energy.
Loudness and energy. Yeah. Other times I'll go up and I'll purposely be like quieter. I'll try to like throw in like punchlines and people don't see them coming, or like tags, but I'll be like quiet about it, and you can't and I'll be like super sarcastic. So like, I don't even know what my voice is. I don't know if I'm going to be the same way in 10 years or not. But
you
like,
feel like you're still calibrated.
Yeah, 100%. And I've been doing it not too long, but long enough where it's like I'm a fucking open micer. Like, I'm not someone who should have a voice or really, like, you know. But when I first started, I had no idea what to do. I remember the first time I went up, that very vaguely, I think I maybe had like 2 or 3 jokes written, and I went up and I'm just like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I think I remember doing a George W. Bush impression my first time up, and you just know that just sounds terrible.
How did that go?
I don't remember.
Any George Bush?
Not well. No, I probably just threw on a shitty like Southern accent and like was talking about politics or something stupid. That's another thing. I never knew what material to do, like. Because, like, I like to relate to, like, present day or, like, something that's happening. Like, I like to do a lot of topical stuff. Like, when I grew up, I was super into Geraldo. Like, he was, like, one of my favorite guys. Like, I used to watch him on the roasts. And he was always doing topical stuff or stuff that you could relate to. But then you hear the people who were like, don't do that shit because you want people who are coming out to see you to get a break from that and to just talk about, like, you know, basic shit like dating and shitting and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I try to do both. But, like, when I first started, I was, like, I met two buddies, the first two kids I ever did stand-up with were working at the club with me, and we would, like, go around. The one kid had been doing it for a couple of years already, and my other buddy had been doing it for a little bit, not crazy long, and I was just like, I don't know what to do. I just started, like, actually trying to write some shit and just try different places out, different rooms to gauge what I was doing, but, like, I'm such a lazy writer that it's like now I kind of just like write an idea down and I try to fucking work it out later. Like, so like I still don't have, like, I still don't have, like, people try to describe my act and somebody called me dark, somebody called me energetic. So like I'll get a different description of my act every time I go up.
Well, because sometimes you're trying for that, yeah. And then sometimes you calibrate, oh, you know, let me be slower here, yeah. Let me do this.
So like to answer your question, I really don't know. I still don't know what I'm doing. I have zero clue what I'm doing.
How long
like,
have you been doing it now?
I've been doing it about 3.5 years.
Oh, okay. How old are you?
25.
Oh, okay.
So like, but I mean like, I don't know.
So you started your senior year.
So you were
21.
I was 21. I started, I don't remember the day. I started October.
That's not 4 years, so that's like 3.5 years.
Right. I don't remember the day. I started October 2015. So like roughly 3.5 years, I guess. Right. That's all I remember. I don't remember the day. But, I don't know my fucking voice. I mean, I don't know if I'll be the... I just try to be better and write better jokes and, like, be able to expand on a joke.
Now, I always think of things in terms of hypothesis, experiment, fact. I have a hypothesis. I think this is funny. Let me experiment on stage. It's a fact that's funny. When I have enough facts, that's my hour. Mm-hmm. And this process took me, like, 15 years. Before now, I'm gonna put out some special soon, but like 15 years, like maybe it'll take you 10, but you know what I mean? Like it's so fucking arduous to figure this out.
Oh no, I know. And if you want me to be honest, I'm like, when I got stuck back in Jersey, like I am now, like the internet is all the shit. Like I don't really want to be going to I go to this open mic because like I just like get a kick out of. Getting the laughs. Like, I'm not trying to get booked on a show. I'm not trying to get noticed by the booker.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to make somebody fucking, like, you know, follow me on Instagram. I'm just trying to make those people laugh, and then it satisfies me. It's very narcissistic and ego-driven a little bit.
I think if you took more selfies like I did, like, maybe you would be... You could... I think you're trying to do it underground until you figure it out.
Oh, stand-up, yeah. I mean, my podcast and all the internet shit we do, and we interview comedians, and we do a lot of shit for YouTube and stuff. Like I'll be honest.
You and Alex Nicholas.
Me, my buddy Alex Nicholas, and my buddy, you know, comedian.
He's been on the podcast, of course, Alex Nicholas.
Previous guest. And then my buddy...
Can I just...
Yeah, yeah.
He's so sweet to me from the first... Like, you know, I got banned from 5 clubs in New Orleans.
I still
I'm a little, like... gun shy from the PTSD. I'm very codependent. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when I feel like I'm in a community of comics that like me, mm-hmm. I could do way better. When I got banned from the Hi Ho for 2 years, and then all these comics are looking at me weird in New Orleans, I was like, wait, what? What? Yeah. You know? And then, like, he was the first one who was, like, so fucking nice to me.
And really gave me an olive branch
to feel comfortable here. So
yeah.
I can't say enough good things about Alex.
No, he's amazing.
I'm sorry.
I'm so happy I met him.
Yeah,
and then but my buddy Mike Sweeney, he's the real guy who was doing the podcast before I met him, and he edits it and he does a lot of shit for it, and he kind of shifted me towards that internet mindset, which you kind of have to do now inevitably, and he has kind of tried to push me towards taking selfies, you know, making videos, whatever. So we try to do a lot of entertaining content that co-aligns with my stand-up. Like, I prefer to get that fan base to come watch me do stand-up because that's what I like to do the most. But, like, I really don't want to be fucking running open mics and doing shitty bar shows. But, I mean, like, I still do them because I like the feeling of laughter.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, after you get off a stage and someone says that was a funny set or that was really good, you know, you get a little fucking hard after. Like, it was awesome, blah, blah, blah. But, like... In terms of today, it's all internet, so it's
You know what blew my mind? I went to I think it was Flappers in Burbank.
Yeah.
I went there one time to the open mic, and the guy started his set by going, yeah, I found a world star with this guy, but anyway, I'm trying some jokes. And I was like, wait a minute, the founder of World Star Hip Hop, like this crazy website where that has billions of hits for like a grandma gets knocked out at the shopping mall, right? He's going... You know, that's all bullshit. You know, that's just my day job. What I want to do is just tell jokes.
Really?
And it's just like, I remember thinking like, wow, the founder of WorldStar is trying to do what I've been doing for the last 9 years, you know, and he's starting day one now at like whatever he was, 40 years old, right? This guy, and I'm just like, like what you're talking about, there's a difference between live performance and internet. Like, yeah, you can have, be an internet...
Huge difference.
You know, an internet mogul, an internet entrepreneur, you know, that does, like, bum fights. Mm-hmm. Like, World Star is, like, bum fights, you know? and then now he's like, you know what the real shit is the, like, telling jokes. So I was like, wow, you're famous from one thing. Can you parlay that internet into this? Or? Yeah.
That's why I'm trying to do both at the same time. But I know I'll never, like, I never want to be like one of those internet guys who's, I know if I get the chance where I have an internet following and they come to see me, I know I'm going to be able to deliver because I started in stand-up. I didn't just start by making stupid videos. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, in terms of just, not even making stupid videos, like, making, like, a podcast, like this podcast, like, making good content people actually want to listen to. So, like, my podcast, Keep a Basement, when we get a DM and says, like, I listened to that and it was great, or I really like you guys, whatever, you know, it makes you feel good. And it's like, yeah, if somebody could say that to me down the line, like, hey, I came and saw you do stand-up that night at the Stress Factory when you were headlining for the weekend, that's going to make me feel really good. So it's kind of like, you know, a big...
Have you got any Keep a Basement posts? Like, any DMs of, like, Instagram models? Like, oh, hey, God, anyway, this pussy's hot tonight, you know? Like, what?
It's funny you mention that. I haven't specifically, but we've gotten people... Yeah, we recently got a girl that discovered us on Spotify because we came up as a suggested podcast underneath... this podcast, Call Her Daddy, which is basically these two whores just talk about sex for an hour, but they're under Barstool, and they're hot, so they're automatically on a top 10 podcast.
Right.
And this girl was like, yeah, I listened to you, they suggested you on the suggestion underneath on Spotify, and I listened and I really liked it. And she DM'd us, and I was like, maybe she just fucking, like, you know, thinks me or Mike or Alex are hot or whatever, but it's like, hey, if you're a fan and you're going to keep listening, that's all I care about. I haven't fucked anybody off of my podcast. Definitely not. But I mean, maybe down the line.
Like, can we talk about your personal life? Are you fucking?
Oh yeah,
like,
whatever you want.
Getting it in, or?
No, I'm not like a crazy fuck machine. I don't get a lot of puss. I don't also go for it. Like, I'm kind of shy and weird. Like, in the out night scene. Like, I'm kind of seeing a girl right now.
Yeah.
Like,
just
nothing.
Sort of.
Yeah, like dating, like light dating. Nothing's official. There's no tags on it or anything. But I mean, like, no, I was never one to, like, go out to the bar every night and pursue girls. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never done that. So, like, I'm not like a fucking, you know, fuck machine or anything like
that. How did you meet this girl? From stand-up? Did she come to a show and then you just talked after? And
kinda, more or less, I kind of, apparently she saw me do stand-up.
At Stress?
No, at this shitty bar down by me, like, months and months ago. And then we had a mutual friend who I do stand-up with. And then we kind of just connected on social media. And then just, like, yeah, we actually met up. Yeah, the first time I actually ever met her, she saw me do this open mic.
That's, you know, and that's weird because it's like internet versus, like, stand-up. It's like, how do you get that pussy? How do you get that fame, you know? So it's, like, it's a thematic. But, yeah, keep going.
No, yeah, we kind of just, like, hey, she likes comedy a little bit, and we kind of just hit it off a little bit. We've been hanging out, like, it's nothing crazy, nothing serious yet, or, you know, nothing serious. We're kind of just, like, vibing, hanging out, mm-hmm. having a good time. She's, like, super low maintenance and, like, laid back, so it's, like, easy to, like, get along with someone like that, especially when you're trying to bust your ass doing comedy and podcasting and stuff like that. You know, you don't have to worry about her being up your ass every 5 minutes.
That's all the thing. Like, I also have problems where I'm just like, okay, you know, I took you out for a bunch of dates. Like, you're my girlfriend now. Like, I always am just like, lock it down because
I was listening to you with, like, I don't know, maybe Malkovich because you guys were talking about
girls. Yeah.
Remember you
so saying that? I for me, it's less of a headache if I know it, or if she assures me in some way that it's like I'm the exclusive guy.
Right.
Because then I get like panic attacks if I'm like doing stand up or whatever. And then I'm like, oh, the girl I'm dating or seeing or but I care about is like, I just think about their like, they're just fucking and sucking constantly other dudes, right? And so then it's like, I can't even focus on what I'm trying to do.
Right.
Right. Because my little girl who's giving me that candy every now and then.
Sure.
Right. You know what I mean? So I get more crazy like that.
Yeah, I can't blame you for thinking that if you were like, you know, if that just aches in your head, like, yeah, we definitely. I mean, I could understand that. You don't want to be thinking about
but
it.
Do you know that you and your girl are exclusive?
I don't
or is
know.
It,
that.
It's not at all.
It hasn't been discussed,
and that doesn't bother you.
No, not really.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's still really early. I mean, I haven't known her. I've known her like a couple months, not even.
Oh, okay.
It's
a
like
couple months.
Like maybe.
How much money have you spent on her? If you put it, if there was like a check, right?
Not much. I mean, honestly, dude, we literally
like $250.
Maybe something like less, probably less than that.
Yeah. Okay.
But like, I pay. She's paid for me a bunch of times already too.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Like, I'll pay. She pays. I'll.
No,
pay, she
I'm
pays.
Asking about the balance. So if
maybe
you spend
couple,
five,
$200.
Maybe $200, maybe. And she spent $200 on you too.
Maybe.
So you spent
maybe
zero,
less, maybe $100. I don't know.
You've spent zero on her.
I don't know. I haven't kept track, but
yeah.
Like maybe. Not,
is that
not
my problem?
Not
that at the end of the day, I go, wait a minute, I spent fucking.
Oh yeah, if you're broke, if you're worried about money,
$312 on you,
and she spends zero.
I saw your box four times. Like I start going like, wait a minute. Like I start getting an Excel spreadsheet out.
Sure, sure.
And being like, wait a minute, can we balance the books here of like how
oh,
much
yeah.
I spend versus how much box I get?
I mean, sure. If that's how you want to look at it, I'm like. I don't give a shit at this point. I know we've probably spent the equal money on each other, so that's like it's not a thing to me.
Yeah.
But she's definitely a special case. Like you're
right.
Not gonna get a lot of girls doing that. Like she's really awesome like that. Like so
yeah.
Like I can't hate on that. That's why
maybe
I'm
just
like
uglier than
it.
You. So I'm just like always like oh yeah, let's go to Red Lobster. You know what I mean?
Dude,
and
you
then
ain't
I'll pay for it.
You're not.
You know what
I'm
mean?
Not saying you're ugly, but you don't have to be good looking these days to get a fucking chick. Trust me. Not
no, you
me,
could
I mean,
say
like,
I'm good looking, though. You
I
could
did.
Say that.
You
no, you didn't. You said you don't have to be.
Well, before that, I said I'm not saying you're not good looking.
So that was like a triple negative.
No, you're not good.
You know, okay.
First of all,
look at these
I like
tits.
The beard. Dude,
they're,
are you kidding me,
these tits are disgusting.
Dude, I have tits. I got a beer belly.
Look
my
at
ass
this.
Is huge.
You want to see? We you want to compare? I'm going to take my ass out right now.
Please do. Dude, trust me.
Ugh.
But I mean,
I'm being triggered. I got triggered.
No, don't worry about it. I mean, you can't, dude, in today's day and age, look, I'm broke too. Like, I can't, yeah, I can't
dude,
blame you at all.
When I was in grad
school, I've been like that. So,
no,
like,
in New Orleans, right? Imagine this.
Love New Orleans.
You're fucking Uber driving for like little $20 here, little $20. You got, I got to spend loads of cash on this car.
Sure.
It's not like I owe this. I don't own this car. Like, I got to make payments on this fucking
sure.
car, right? I take a girl out, I spend $100. $100? Mm. What? You know what I mean? And then it's like, all right. Hey, anyway, but I was staying this floozy in Jersey for a minute, and like you know, took her out a couple times, blah blah blah.
Sure.
We had some sex, blah blah blah.
Sure.
Ran in the woods like a wild dog. Haven't heard from her in a minute, and it's just like, whoa, you know, she was like that unicorn you're talking about, where it was just like, this is just, look, you take me out, we just have sex, right? So it was like the books were always balanced, right?
Right.
But then it was just like the ghost. Like the ghost before Christmas. Just gone.
Hey, it's happened to me a
you
bunch
know?
Of times. I mean,
yeah?
Yeah.
So I just gotta like, you know, like I wish I was more like you in how you handle where it's like, yeah, that's what girls are happening or whatever. I can handle that with certain situations, like politically or like, you know, so you know what I mean? We were talking about earlier. But off mic. But I'm good at that. But when it comes to girls, that's such my weakness. Cause like once they like get you know once they like do that thing where they go ba 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 and then like you go you know what I mean then I'm like I love you you know what I mean and it's like a trick that always works.
That's hilarious.
It's like direct. There's like a direct line.
Yeah.
I wish,
mean
yeah.
I mean hey it's happened to me a million times. I never got a lot of girls. I never really like I was never really pursuing a lot of girls. This is a new thing. This is newer. Like I said, it's fresh. So it's like I'm just not worrying about it yet. If she wants to bring it up, or if I want to bring it up one day, and we discuss where we are, where we're at, maybe we're just fucking hanging out, and it won't be anything. I mean, I really don't know. But it's just like for now, and I'm worried about doing my podcast. I'm worried about doing comedy.
Right, right.
And she's so laid back and easy to hang out with that it's kind of just like it's a good situation. It's like
yeah.
fun. Like, all right, I'm not doing anything tonight. We could hang out. We could go out.
Right.
I'm not spending hundreds of dollars on her weekly at all.
Right, right.
I've been seeing her like maybe 2-3 times a week.
So, does she ever come over your place and you cook for her? Is that how you keep
hasn't
the budget
happened.
Low?
Hasn't happened yet.
You've never cooked for her once? Like,
no.
Grandma's meatballs?
No.
Why do I do this?
That's good, though. I would love that.
Does she cook for you? How do you guys eat together?
We just go out.
Yeah?
We both don't have great living situations, so it's hard to, like, you know, come over and go over. But we just go out, usually.
And you guys go Dutch, or it's like 50-50, or don't even worry about it?
What
are we talking about? White Castle? Red Lobster?
Yeah, nothing crazy. Yeah, like, no, like a fucking bar. We've eaten probably most of our meals at a bar, honestly. Or
Get the jalapeno poppers.
Yeah, no, like, we'll split it, or she'll pay, and then I'll pay, or I'll pay, and she'll pay. Like, it's, you
know, whatever.
It's whatever, yeah. It's super casual, very casual.
I gotta learn how to do this. Just like straight road beef, and, like, not even, like, just hey. Like, what? You're calling me? That's disrespectful. You know what I mean?
This hey, is I've my been private in the other phone. Seat. I've been in the other seat where it's like, nah, I really, really want to be with this girl now, so, like, can we figure out what this is? I've been like that.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
This is just different. It's I can't really explain it.
So, yeah, it's like half the audience, half the comic is like the show, you know? And it's like half the girl, half you.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like comedy, like you were saying. It's like you just said, half you, half the audience. It's like you want to do your part to whatever extent you can, but you also want the audience to come to you a little bit and be open to it. And that's where she comes in. And then you just kind of make it like a 50-50.
Right, right. I'm like, oh, it's broke. I gotta fix it.
Nah, don't oh, do you worry wanna, about it. Ignore it.
You wanna get sushi? Like, let you me fix get sushi? It. Let me fix it.
Luckily, I hate sushi.
You know, Uncle Eric comes to town, and then I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, man. But that's crazy because you've been all over. You've been fucking New Orleans, L.A.
I went to New School in New York for, but I did the UCB the whole time.
Okay.
And then,
yeah, you used to do only improv, right?
Yeah, only improv from, like, but I started with stand-up when I was, like, 16.
Jesus,
and I did it, like, 12 times or 18 times or I don't know exactly.
Yeah.
And then I saw a show at the UCB, and it blew my fucking mind. And they said at the end, we teach classes. So when I was 17, I guess that happened. So when I was, like, a junior in high school, I commuted from Westmore Central, Chester, New Jersey, to New York once a week to train and improv, and then I went to New School. I just kept doing it, and like a week before I graduated from the New School, I was performing with them regularly on a show. And then my girlfriend left me, and I was like, oh my god. So I flew to Los Angeles, like, where she, you know, but I called my buddy and my friend from high school, and we flew to LA, and We shacked up together, and then he moved out, and then the girl moved in, and then, you know, that only lasted two more years, but, you know, I worked on reality shows for 5 years, but then around 2011, or 2012, I was like, you know, I've done, like, improv for, like, 9 years.
Right.
From, I guess, 2003 plus nine, to 2012, and then I was like, you know, I don't have an album, I don't have anything to show for all this work. So if I start to do stand-up now, I'll have an album in however many years. And then 2012, I just did straight stand-up from then on. So I, like, maybe a year when I was 16 to 17, I did stand-up.
Right.
And then again when I was, like, 25, like your age, to present day. And only now am I, like, I'm a pretty good stand-up now. But, I mean, it took fucking forever. And the weirdest thing was blending my improv skills with my stand-up. Because when I would do stand-up, I was like, this joke, this joke, this joke. If anyone said anything, what? Let me react to it. Now I'm totally lost.
Right.
And now I feel like I can more blend, like, oh, that happened. Let me address the situation. And now here's my bit, and everything's cool. But before it was like, I'm on a list, and I'm doing my jokes, and it's different. So, yeah, it's very, but I definitely think all that improv training super helped my stand-up, you know?
Yeah.
Because it just makes you, I don't know, more aware of just, like, how, it's like, for me, why I learned from improv is, you know, Zach Woods was one of my teachers, and he said, he was a Gabe in the Office and all this stuff, and he said something really interesting about comedy. He was like, committing is more important than having good jokes. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Commitment. So if you're really confident about, there's, I own 2 grain silos, I'm the best fucking bean farmer in Connecticut. If you're just passionate, that's way better than having material.
Jeez, never heard that.
And it's like, wow. So when, if I'm lost or if I'm not, if I'm like, this joke, I don't know how I feel about it. Yeah, it will suck. It will suck. But if you're like, I don't know how I feel about this joke, let me say the shit out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's always the better option.
Yeah.
So that just little skill from improv has now kind of come into my stand-up. But speaking of which, we got to sign up at the Stress. So let's go downstairs and maybe we can talk a little bit more and close out. But let's sign up right now. Get you a spot. All right.
Yeah, let's see if I can get lucky.
Unfortunately, that's all I was able to record with Dr. Tom Zappia. I was asked to host the show, and so I had to kind of, after this, get the list together and talk to some people, and, you know, plus I started drinking, you know. I'm a fat piece. I woke up so bloated today. It was, you know, oh my God. I got to call my therapist and a chiropractor or something. Anyway, this is a little outro. Tom Zappia.
Oh, yeah.
This is a Highway Diary. You know, we haven't had a conclusion.
Oh,
You know. Anyway, Smoke Pot Worship Aliens. I've been Eric Collerbuck. This has been Highway Diary, episode 216.
Ooh, I love 216. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Tom Zappia.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you can check out his podcast.
Yes, Keep It Basement. You can find
Keep It Basement with Alex Nicholas.
Alex Nicholas, Mike Sweeney, Tom Zappia. Find us on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes. All Keep It Basement. YouTube.com/Keep It Basement. So
Tom Zappia, everybody.
Find my shit there.
That's been another episode of the Highway Motherfucking Diary in the Bag. Thanks to my guest, Tom Zappia.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate it.